This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, Australia's only LGBTI program focused on the horror and sci-fi community.
Sonia here for Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. We're talking on the phone tonight to a film writer and programmer, Kayla Jeunesse, who is now residing in Tasmania, which is awesome. And we're going to talk to her about some of the awesome things that are going to be happening in 2016 in Tasmania and her involvement with something called Stranger With My Face. Over to you, Kayla. Welcome.
Hi. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. It's been a while since you've been an Aussie, and now you're...
Yeah, well, 2 years.
And now here you are. Well, there you are in Tasmania.
Yeah.
So what are you doing in Tassie?
Well, I'm doing a residency with the Stranger With My Face Film Festival. It's a festival run by Bryony Kidd, who's a filmmaker down here in Tasmania. And this is the fourth edition that's coming up from April 14th to 17th, 2016. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of experience working for different genre festivals, and I really like Bryony's programming, so I just came down to sort of work on some various projects with her, including the festival. And so we're already hard at work, you know, looking at films, and we just launched a new website and stuff, so it's very exciting.
Yeah, the website does look great, by the way.
Thank you.
You've been working on that too, yourself and both
yeah.
of you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So you've come a long way, though, to be a programmer and to help out with this festival. You've come from Canada.
Yeah.
It's a long way to come. But like you said, this festival has stood out for you. What's brought you? What's attracted you to come to Tasmania?
Well, I mean, when I came here 2 years ago, Bryony actually brought me here 2 years ago to do a Stranger With My Face-related panel at Monster Fest. I just was really impressed with the scene, the horror and genre film scene in Australia in general, you know, so I was really impressed with the sort of emerging filmmakers that I was meeting and with the support of the fans, you know, and the collectors and things that would come out to the event. And it just seemed like a really sort of buzzing scene. And I had been thinking about it ever since, you know, when I went to Canada, I kept thinking I would, you know, I'd love to get back there and work with some of those people on some projects because, you know, there was so much energy and enthusiasm for the genre.
Yeah, true. I mean, Monster Pictures, we've just completed the festival's just finished, the 3-day festival here in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And it just goes from strength to strength. So many interesting people that they bring out and also the fans. And I think it's the way it appeals to so many fans in the genre, which is always great. It's like a meeting of the tribes, one could say.
Yeah.
And you were there for Monster Fest too.
Yeah, I was there for the whole festival. So yeah, that was great. I did the Dee Wallace masterclass and everything.
Oh yeah, tell us what that was like.
It was super intense. I mean, I'm not an actor at all. I was just a fan of Dee Wallace. And so I just thought, what better way to sort of hang out with this actor that I really like than to take this acting masterclass from them. And so there was about 27 people in the class, and it was an all-day thing. It was about 5 or 6 hours long. And she started off by basically doing a psychic reading for everybody.
Oh.
She had sort of prepared a reading or at least some sort of a statement just based on the vibes that she would get from people's names, you know, when they registered. And so when we all went in, the first thing she did was sort of go through everybody and tell them what she thought the thing was that was holding them back, you know, and what they needed to work on and stuff. And so it got kind of emotional for a lot of people before we even got into thing. And I had never acted before, so I was terrified, you know, but it was really fun and I was glad I did it.
Did it sort of trigger anything in you? Did it help with acting for the first time?
The interesting thing for me was that a lot of the things she was teaching us, I realized, were actually applicable in general life, you know, regardless of whether you were an actor or not, which was a lot of it was about just sort of existing in the moment and trying to just appreciate, you know, the environment that you're in and relating to the people around you and also being able to sort of control your emotions, you know, because this is obviously part of acting is being able to control how you behave. And so you know, so a lot of it was actually helpful in that way, to remind yourself that you do actually have control over how you act and how you are, you know.
Really interesting too. Could this be a new career for you, acting?
Definitely not. I mean, I don't think I was terrible, but I didn't feel like I had to do a scene, and at the end of the scene, I didn't feel I had it in me to do it again. So that's definitely not a good sign for an actor, because they usually have to do things over and over again. So.
Of course, yeah, excellent. Your experience in Australia sounds like it is a real departure for you in a different way. Very interesting times ahead. Which brings me to looking at some of that past that you have got there. And, of course, part of Spectacular Optical, described as a cult film website and small press publisher that you are as well. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about that and how that got started, just briefly?
Yes, Spectacular Optical, it's a publishing company, book publishing. We do cults and pop culture books. But, you know, we're still young. We've only published two books so far. One was called Kid Power, about child empowerment in film and television. And then the other one was Satanic Panic, which was about this hysteria in the 1980s around the widespread belief that there was a satanic conspiracy behind everything. And so both of these are anthology books with many different authors involved that have done either interviews or essays and things like that. So Spectacular Optical, originally it was a website, sort of a website that was specifically created to accompany the Fantasia Film Festival in Montreal.
Right.
So years ago, it actually was their sort of blog or journal, you know, online journal, and I was the editor of that. So I worked for them at that time. But then the website started taking on too much of its own identity, where it was not really directly feeding, you know, people to the festival. You know, it was not acting as a promotion for the festival in the same way that they wanted. It was getting a lot of readership overseas and people that were not going to go to the festival.
Right.
And so they didn't feel that it was worth it to keep doing it, but they basically gifted the website to me, which was cool, because it was a really custom-made website that took a lot of work, several months, and a lot of money to make. And so the director of the festival, Pierre Corbet, just gave me this website. And I decided to sort of rebrand it as a small press publisher. So I still do articles and interviews and things on the website, but much more sporadically than it was when it was the Fantasia website. So now there'll be an article once a month or twice a month, but the real focus is on the publications.
And like you said, if you've got an international audience, the publication aspect, I guess, can reach that audience better in some ways.
Yeah,
you don't have to go to a festival. You can actually read about some of the topics or themes.
But the publications are, you know, they'll be about all, you know, they're curated books, and so they are usually about one very specific topic. So
this is very specific with your more recent one, The Satanic Panic, Pop Cultural Paranoia in the 1980s. That is pretty specific.
Yeah.
And can't get more specific, really. But I'm just loving the imagery and the forts and the culture that comes up when you look at what Satanic Panic is about, the book especially. And also it's like you've looked at the underside, in a way, the underside of the 80s. It's not all about neon and fluoro and flares. I mean, you know, blow wave here. There's a darker side, which is I have not seen, you know, have a spotlight on before, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there are other books about the Satanic Panic, but a lot of them are actually almost 20 years old now, you know.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since there's been one, and obviously there hasn't been one that has the same degree of hindsight, you know, that this book has, because it's able to look back on the era with a lot more distance. Yeah, so we just felt like it was sort of right to go and look at that again. Because there did seem to be a resurgent interest in the Satanic Panic. Like if you sort of, you know, if you Google it online, you'll find all kinds of recent articles where people are clearly obsessed with it and interested in it. And so luckily our book sort of taps into that.
Yeah, it was a very, I remember it being this phenomenon, and you're thinking, this can't be happening, you know. It was almost like a mass hysteria, witch hunting, that all combined with pop culture and young people, teenagers. It's like the 50s gone really, really flip side, not rock and roll anymore. It was very odd and very dangerous too, like affected and harmed a lot of people just because it was
definitely
this phenomenon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Taking away what you have learnt from making that book. Can you tell us what you think? Satanic panic, could it ever happen again?
Still, you know, in more devoutly religious communities, it never went away. You know,
yeah.
It's still, the reason we refer to the 1980s as you know, that era of satanic panic is mostly because of how much it affected secular people, like people who were not especially religious.
Mm.
But, you know, it still continues in... And there's mass hysteria in the United States right now.
Yes.
You know, so the satanic panic is just one manifestation of this hysteria that just rears its head every other decade or so in the States. You know, there's very dangerous mass hysteria frequently in the United States, and you know we're experiencing that right now with the.
Yeah.
Fear of terrorism and, you know, like the argument over gun control.
Yeah.
It's especially from here, from being in Tasmania and reading the news, it just seemed like pure chaos over there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's what's been reported, and reports of more sort of mass murders and killings and shootings than any other form of, you know, terrorism as such in the United States.
Yeah.
It does look so alien and scary to us from this perspective. But, I mean, you are a Canadian. You live right next door to it. That's different again for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I'm actually in a good spot right now being in Tasmania.
Yeah, literally. And you sound
about
very
as far
clear.
Away from it as you can get. So.
Or not, because Tasmania, of course, has a dark, of course, history and a sad history with involving a gun or two. With the Bryant murders.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Is there a Satanic Panic 2, do you think, in this whole...
Like a sequel to the
book? Yeah,
yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, there's definitely way more stories and case studies that we didn't go into because of space limitations. So, you know, it's certainly possible, but I feel as though it would be a much more niche book, you know, because we have covered a lot of the major cases and we've covered a lot of the sort of more entertaining pop cultural aspects of it, you know, the sort of heavy metal and Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that, you know. So there's definitely specific cases that we could go into more detail with in another book, but I feel like it would be for a much more limited and obsessive audience. So something to think about, but I don't know that it's on the cards immediately.
Yeah, maybe 10 or 20 years from now.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah, it might be timely. Now, of course, your background is, of course, most people will know you from House of Psychotic Woman, an amazing book.
Yeah.
And something's really, has that defined your career, do you think? Or
yeah, in a certain way. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, when I wrote it, I didn't think anyone would like it at all, and I was totally surprised. And now I sort of feel like I'll never do anything people like that much again, and so that's it. That's my high point, you know. But you know, so it's sort of depressing to have that realization. But at the same time, the book has allowed me to travel a lot. You know, there's like a lot of festivals and things that have invited me to come and talk because of it, and so I've gotten an enormous amount of opportunities because of that book. So I am super grateful that people seem to like it so much. But yeah, I would say it probably has defined my career in a certain way, because people just look at me as the crazy woman, movie obsessive person or whatever.
Well, no one's ever quite, as far as I'm aware, has put it in that context the way that you've done it, to talk about your life, very personal stuff, family stuff, and to relate it to the passion that you have as well. So
yeah, I mean, there are actually a couple of other books. There's a guy named Adam Rockoff in the States that did a book a couple years after mine that was sort of a, you know, about his personal story and his interest in films. And then right around the same time as my book, there's another guy from the States named Walter Chaw, and he did a book that was just about one movie. It was just about the movie Miracle Mile, which is a favorite movie of mine. And he took very much the same approach that I did in my book, except that his book is just about one movie. And, of course, I didn't know about his book until long after mine had been published, but it was, I think they were both released possibly even in the same month of each other. So,
Synchronicity or something going on there. Maybe psychic if Dee Wallace, you know, picked up on that perhaps. But now jumping forward in time where you are now, Tasmania, and, of course, the big one, the event that everyone's excited about. Well, I am. The Stranger with My Face Festival. Preparations are happening for that. You've got a lot of work there to do, the two of you, you and Bryony Kidd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we have, yeah, there's, because there's lots of different elements of the festival. There's not only the festival itself, there's also the Tasploitation Challenge, which is a 48-hour challenge. So people should keep glued to the website, strangerwithmyface.com, because there's going to be announcements going out soon about the Tasploitation Challenge. And there's also the Tasmanian Gothic Scriptwriting Challenge.
Ooh,
and there's the festival itself, and then there's also other sort of satellite events and things we're planning. So, you know, I just got down here maybe a month ago, so we've just started to get really into the thick of things. But yeah, we're going to have a ton of exciting announcements soon. So that I can't really talk about yet.
No, that's cool.
So you'll have to have me back or have Bryony, the festival director, on to talk more about those things.
Yeah. Well, it has been described, and this is from the website, been described as the event that fills a gap that's been largely ignored by other festivals. And that's Screen Hub, pretty much. You think that's true? And why do you think that's the case?
Well, I mean, I think that gap is being filled a little bit better now than it was a few years ago, you know, so there's definitely more sort of genre film festivals being devoted to women that have popped up in the last couple of years, and so we're seeing more opportunities for female filmmakers. But I mean, but it's just a part of the sort of industry-wide problem of female directors not being given the same opportunities as male directors. And so even though the festival does occasionally allow films that are not directed by women, that is the focus specifically because it's addressing that disparity. So.
No, there's definitely a gap there. And, I mean, everybody jumps online and gets very excited when they see a story online about something like Star Wars. Old J.J. Abrams is having a meeting with a bunch of women filmmakers or filmmaker writers and so on. And everyone gets excited by that. And it's, to me, that's kind of polarizing the whole thing. And to me, it's like, why should we be excited by that anyway? There's been a lot of people that he's talked to, actually, but nothing's sort of come through as solid and as a commitment. And I just wondered if you had an opinion about that.
About being marginalized?
Yes.
About people cheering and applauding, like when women are given an opportunity.
Yeah, from a man.
Way that is kind of, well, I mean, it's true, but it's necessary until it stops becoming a special thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think that a cause like that needs as much cheerleading as it can get, even though the ideal would be that it becomes the norm and it becomes something that people don't even think about anymore. But we're not there yet. And so in the meantime, if people want to get excited and get behind things like that, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Okay. Yeah, no, good point. Good point. Excellent. So you're going to be around too for coming up for, I believe it's the Christmas Trash TV Marathon, which Cinemaniacs Melbourne are putting on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That looks awesome.
Yeah. It's a show that I've been doing for several years, usually at Christmas. I used to run a little micro cinema in Montreal, and this would be our Christmas fundraising show that we would always do. And it's like a 6-hour marathon of television Christmas specials with commercials, videos, short films, all kinds of ephemeral things sort of interspersed throughout the program.
Yeah.
And it's free to get in, but you pay to get out. So you can just walk in, and you can walk in any time, but the time you come in is written on your hand. And then when you want to leave, the time gets counted down because it's cheaper the longer you stay. It goes down $1 every hour, and then if you stay for the full 6 hours, it's only $5. So
that's
but
great.
It's very fun, you know.
Do you hold people captive? Can they like?
Yes.
Great. I like that. I like that. It's like that lentil place, but like that lentil place that Sting has, isn't it? Like you pay by lentil or something. I don't know.
Oh, really? I don't know anything about that. Lentils. I know Bon Jovi has some restaurant.
Yeah, that's right.
What you can, but
you got some classics there. Yeah. I think you've even got Golden Girls, so herpes jokes.
Yeah, I mean, normally I don't even say what any of the specials are going to be because I like to keep it a total mystery. But I knew that because it's my first time in Melbourne, and people don't have any context for this event whatsoever, I should probably tease them with a couple of titles so they know what to expect. You know, but it is things like that. You know, it'll be sort of classic Christmas specials, but also Christmas episodes of TV shows. You know, so The Golden Girls is an example of that. And then just weird things. I think the other thing I mentioned in the promotional text is the Dallas Cowboys Christmas. You know, there's like, you know, it's them singing horribly. And, you know, so there's a real mix of stuff. And some of it is you know, hilariously bad, but other stuff is really poignant, you know. So some of the stuff is actually really, you know, really poignant and seasonal and stuff. So, and there's horror also. There's like horror stuff. There's, yeah, so it's a real mix of stuff.
That's cool. And that's at the Backlot Studios in South Bank.
No, it's actually not at the Backlot. It's at Loop.
Oh, it's at the Loop. Sorry. I was looking at Silent Night, Deadly Night. I'm getting excited about that too, but that's much later.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not till the 26th.
Cinemaniacs has too many events. You can't even
keep
track of
them. I mean, I went to their website and I couldn't find the... Yeah, okay. The Loop is 23 Myers Place, Melbourne in the city. It's Saturday, December 19th, 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. If you stay the whole time, it's real value for money. Just don't leave. They won't let you. Or if you do, you've got to pay up lots of cash. And it's, well, you know, they deserve that cash.
Well, so, it's not lots of cash. It's like it starts at $15 and it goes down a dollar every hour. So,
well, that's still very cheap, you know.
Yeah,
very cheap. So, that's December the 19th, 3 p.m. and you'll be there in person. That's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm going to leave it there with you, Kayla, just because, yeah, I realize time is moving on. But look, thank you so much for speaking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream, Kayla Janess. We'll be
hearing
a lot more about you in 2016. And good luck with everything.
All right. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
You have been listening to a special edition Sci-Fi and Scream podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.